Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome to another episode of Behind the Brain podcast. And today's guest is Ollie Mack. I've known Ollie for about 3 years. He's a fellow personal trainer and he is a really nice dude. Got a lot of time for this guy. And I've learned quite a few cool things off him as well. What's quite cool about Ollie is he talks about his fitness journey, but he talks about how he's transitioned from being a bit of a meathead into now a long distance runner, and it's sort of the thing that's fulfilling his life at the moment, because I do feel like at times we do need to push our bodies to a little bit more, to a limit, should we say. And just remember, what say I might find hard isn't your kind of hard, and that's something that we need to understand as well. Don't ever compare yourself to someone who is doing these mad things. You know, you work on yourself, so just don't compare yourself to other people. As always, if you enjoy the episode, let me know, share it if you can to someone who you might think it helps. And without further ado, here's Ollie. Hello, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Behind the Brain podcast, and today I have a fellow CSG member, Ollie Mack, turned professional runner. What's going on, bro?
Professional runner's a bit strong, mate, but yeah, I'm good. You're right.
But I just want to inflate your ego straight from there. Yeah, good. So I've known Ollie for about 3 years, and we met through the lovely Andy McKenzie and his sort of combined strength group, which is sort of like a, what would you call that? Like a private mentoring to a degree, isn't it? Group that you meet up once a month and do sort of bits and bobs. Just trying to, I suppose, be better at coaching. It's just, that's what that is, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say it's more of an in-person mentoring group.
Yeah.
So like every month you spend 2-3 days together, sort of going over an aspect of coaching, training, and yeah,
that's it.
Shits and gigs, isn't it?
And having horrific fucking air dying sessions at the end of the day.
Mate, some of them haunt me still.
Yeah, he's a horrible programmer. So
yeah.
Thing, and these are coming from questions that I genuinely don't know about you. Talk to me about sort of what got you into fitness, or whenever you started, I suppose, becoming a personal trainer. Because I know obviously you used to play rugby, but that's as far as it goes.
So I started playing rugby, I think about like 8 or 9, and was pretty shit at it, to be honest. And then over the years, as I kind of grew, I got a little bit better at it. And once you get to that kind of 15, 16-year-old age, I wanted to kind of do stuff outside of rugby to kind of help with it.
Mm.
Started going to a local gym with a mate of mine. And then over the next few years, continued to go to the gym, got more into it. And I think I was quite lucky in a respect that I put on muscle like fairly easily.
Hmm.
And at the time I was quite a spotty, greasy kid.
Yeah. Full of testosterone, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Where I think I was fairly underconfident in how I looked, you know, I think the kind of thing that gave me my identity was being bigger than everyone else. Mm. So I kind of channeled a lot of my energy into lifting.
Operation Massive.
Yeah, pretty much.
Did you notice a positive benefit to the rugby then by lifting the weights? Was you lifting the weights in a good way to transfer over to the sport, or was you doing it?
Oh, mate, there was no real... you know, it's kind of like when you're 15, 16, I used to train with one of the lads I played rugby with. And we were kind of just, you know, muddling our way through. And it helped in the fact that I was bigger and I was stronger. But I wasn't doing it with any
intent.
You know, if I was to train myself now for rugby, I'd lift in a completely different way to what I was doing then.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that pushed it forward was that I got put into my school first team at 16.
Mm.
So I was suddenly, you know, whereas when you're playing with people at a similar age, playing with people of a similar size, and then suddenly I was up against an 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, like, I just shit myself a little bit and was like, fucking hell, I need to get massive so that I can hold my own there. Which actually, like, in retrospect, if I'd worked a little bit more on, like, the skills element,
yeah,
it probably would have served me better. But, yeah, you know, hindsight and all.
Specificity, actually doing the sport instead of doing lifting the weights, essentially,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So what happened after that then?
So I had a gap year, took a year out, you know, basically went on a piss up around the world. Like, ended up coming home just through chance. Basically, I was in Thailand and I had a flight booked back to Australia where I'd been living with a couple of my mates. And the plan was not to go to uni and just live the dream in Australia. And basically, I got on the piss with a load of Northern Irish lads the night before I was flying home, yeah. And woke up as my flight left and was like, oh, fuck. So I had to, like, Skype my mum and be like, yeah, so I've missed my flight and I don't have any money. And she, to be fair, she was just like, look, I'll pay for you to go back to Australia or I'll pay for you to come home. Do whatever you want. So I kind of remember sitting down in this bar and literally writing out a pros and cons list of both. And the pros of coming home outweighed the pros of going back to Australia. So yeah. I got on a flight and then went to uni. Didn't play much sport,
no.
Or did anything, just kind of went to the gym to begin with and then began playing rugby league.
Yeah.
And then played rugby league for the next 3 years.
What did you study?
Well, I started doing business.
Yeah.
And then didn't go. So, yeah. And didn't really like it as well. That was a bit of a weird choice, but, and then went and did an exercise, nutrition and health degree, which I loved, to be fair.
Yeah.
And so when I was in the rugby league team, I was lucky enough to get on, like, a performance squad.
Mm.
So we had use of, like, what was the high performance center at the time, and got, like, strength and conditioning 3-4 times a week.
Wow.
And that's kind of where I really began learning about kind of different elements of strength and conditioning and also about how you can train differently and get, yeah, different results. So typically most of my training had been very bodybuilding based.
As it always is with most people, yeah. Isn't it? It's just what's out there. If you Google training, that's what you're going to come across, that style of training, aren't you?
Yeah. And then, I mean, I was lucky enough to, do you know a guy called Tim Stevenson?
No.
From School of Calisthenics.
Oh, I know the guy, the dude you're on about now though. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. So Tim was my S&C coach for 2 years. And that was, like, when I look back at it now, I'm so grateful to have had that experience, because he thought about, he was ahead of the game back then in the way he was thinking about stuff.
Mm.
Refused to let us do any chest movements apart from, like, press-ups, because he was just like, we just need to get your back as strong as possible and get your shoulders stable. We were doing, like, handstands against the wall back then and stuff like that. So that was where I really kind of fell in love with, I already enjoyed lifting, but I kind of, it took it to another level.
Did you see yourself being a coach then when you were doing that stuff, or was that still quite early?
So I, when I was at uni, I did my PT qualification.
All right.
Did it, went into a DW Sports that summer and coached there, or PT'd there out of for like 3 months or something, three, four months. And I hated it by the end.
Really? What? Why?
Just so much. I just felt a lot of pressure from it.
Mm.
Like, you're thrown in. You've got 6 weeks.
How old are you then?
23. 2022, 2023. Mm.
Yeah.
And also, like, I just think it was too early. Like, I wasn't in the mental space to be doing that. Plus, I was trying to do my last year of degree. So when the summer rolled round and we went back to pre-season and stuff like that, I was like, no, I'm just going to sack this off and play rugby and finish my degree. So yeah, did my final year. then from there, I went to Loughborough University.
Yeah, I thought you did.
To do an MSc in sport and exercise nutrition.
By the way, isn't Loughborough probably the best sport-based uni in the country, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. But I did a term there and then dropped out.
Okay.
For a variety of reasons, but one of them was I just didn't really feel like I was getting what I wanted out of it.
Mm.
And number two, I think I changed then the kind of idea of what I wanted to do. Like going into that, my idea was to work with athletes.
Yeah, as it always is, isn't it?
Yeah. And then I just remember we had this seminar with a cardiologist, and he was basically saying, he was like, all of you in this room want to work with athletes, and there's this many people going for that many jobs. He was like, whereas you've got the general population, which is huge.
Mm.
And he's like, you can go and impact people's lives so much more effectively with your skill sets.
Wow.
But the stuff we were learning was A, stuff I'd already been taught, and B, we were so focused on athletes. Mm. I was just like, there's no point me continuing this.
Fair enough.
Plus, to be honest, I wasn't really for supposedly the best sports university in the world, in the UK. I wasn't really that impressed with the teaching we were getting.
Really? That's quite, so that, yeah. That one meeting sort of had quite a big turnaround for you then.
Yeah, it definitely like kind of
put things into perspective.
Yeah. And I think because of my degree, like a big part of that was the health element.
Mm.
And how, you know, you can use exercise for, you know, to help a variety of different diseases and things like that. So I already knew that. And then things like that conversation just further pushed me in that direction, I reckon.
How old
so I got to
then?
A point, I was like 24.
Okay, right, yeah.
So I got to a point where I was like, yeah, there's not really much point in me continuing this. So I dropped out and then ended up kind of flitting between three different jobs. Like I was working as a rugby coach. I was working as a bouncer. and also I was doing like some health testing for a company. So I'd go in to like a workplace and I'd do health testing on all their employees.
Really? What did that consist of? When you say health testing, what's that? What was that?
Cholesterol, blood pressure, health and lifestyle questionnaires, and then giving people advice based upon those kind of things. Yeah. It's like, I guess it's like doing, and it was like a lot of it was really quick. Like sometimes you get an hour, sometimes you get 20 minutes to be like, you just rattle through people and be like, yeah, you're good, boy. Or be like, right, you should probably think about doing this, this, and this.
And that helped people.
I think having some data for them to look at probably helped them. Mm. And maybe drew their attention to certain aspects of their health. But it's the same problem as you get in PTing, right? The people you see in front of you are the people that have made that jump.
Yeah.
It's not a reflection of the general population because the people that don't want to see that feedback just don't go.
Just don't do it, yeah.
You know, so you're still going to get the sample that you're looking at is still a reflection of the healthy kind of a segment of that business.
Yeah.
But was it the stress element was really interesting, and you did have some people that were like, yeah, like a few, like one of the lads I knew from there dealt with people who were suicidal and stuff like that. Wow. So, you know, because a lot of the time you're a stranger, you're just a.
There's no judgment, like, is there? So people feel like they can open up to you.
Yeah, and they do. Like, who else are they going to open up to? Their colleagues, their friends, their family. And
some people are quite lonely if they even have that, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
So after this, when did you decide, because obviously you're working three jobs, making ends meet, when did you decide and think, right, I need to do like something more career-driven, I suppose?
So I stayed in Nottingham because of my girlfriend at the time. We broke up. I moved back down to Kent. And I was just looking, for a job. And I ended up being offered this job as a personal trainer. And I got offered another job as a assistant manager in a Majestic wine store. And I was like, well, I like fitness and I like wine. But I was like, I had to think about it. I was like, to be honest, the fitness side of, like, I kind of felt like I hadn't properly put it to bed. Like, I kind of felt like I'd failed at it a little bit. And I wanted to give it another go before completely shutting that door.
It's funny how you have that bad experience and, like, you nearly don't do it again because of that. It's like when clients have a bad experience of a personal trainer.
Yeah.
And then they don't go back to personal training because they have that perception of what it's going to be like. And it's just like, no, give someone else. Not all personal trainers are going to suit that person, are they?
No.
You know, you just got to give it another crack of the whip.
Yeah. And I think, like, I was that much further along and I was in a better place and I didn't have the overheads. And so, the job that I originally got offered was basically a full-time gym assistant with the ability to PT on top. So it was kind of like you get a base salary, but you can earn more through PT. So, and this is kind of like, whenever I speak to someone about, you know, going into PT, I'm like, if you can do something like that, where it's not just you do or die.
Yeah, you're self-employed.
You get clients. Yeah, because it's just such a hard way, such a hard entry into fitness. And I think it pushes you to make decisions you wouldn't necessarily want to make, take on people you wouldn't want to take on. Whereas if you have a bit of money coming in, you don't have that pressure. You can still live and begin to, you know, kind of master your craft over the time.
Yeah, it's just less pressure of trying to make ends meet, isn't it, essentially?
Yeah.
Whereas now you've got actual brain capacity to focus on coaching, learn about people's soft skills and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I went in there. I think I was there for 3.5 years. So I went from full-time member of staff, transitioned to full-time PT. But the problem that with that place was I had no control. Yeah, I had no control over what I was charging.
Did you not?
So there was always going to be a limit to how much I could earn based upon the model of PTing there. So I was like, if I want to be able to progress, I need to look for something else. And then probably about a year in, you know, 2.5 years into being there, I began working over at Fieldworks with Stu Frew.
So when you was working at this place, is this the corporate job you sort of used to work at? Where we knew each other then, didn't we?
Yeah. So I was working in a gym inside a bank in Canary Wharf.
Yeah, right. That's it.
Which theoretically you should be, you know, earning loads of money and, you know,
but it just
wasn't loads of clients and just wasn't that. And don't get me wrong, like, it was a great experience and I really enjoyed my time there. It was, you know, really fun. Definitely a wake up call when I first stepped foot in there. And just gave me the ability to progress and not have any pressure on that. You know, probably about 6 months into that job, I joined Combined Strength.
Yeah.
And then I've been in since, and that was probably 5 years ago.
Yeah, bloody hell.
Well, it was 5 years ago this month, yeah.
And is that how you met Stuart Fieldworks as well?
Yeah, so I kind of met Stu, and then there was a couple of times when Andy came down and went across to Fieldworks and trained there. And then I think, like, Stu wants to build an environment, or has definitely built an environment where he wants good coaches in there training people. So he kind of turned around and was like, you know, and we were quite similar in the respect of some of the ways we think. I was just like, look, I'd love to have you kind of come across and do some coaching. And it wasn't like, you know, a huge distance away. So I began kind of working between the two. And then I transitioned to doing like 2 days a week over at Fieldworks and doing 3 days, you know, 3 to 4 days a week in Canary Wharf. And then I left in December 2019. In Canary Wharf, and then so the first 3 months of 2020 I was like gradually building business, and I kind of got to a place where I was like quite happy and things were beginning to go in the right direction, and then boom, COVID happened. Bam.
And what did that just take everything away? Did those people move into online, or was that just it for you?
That just kind of fucked me a bit, to be honest, because I'd given up that court, which was probably the safer option. You know, if I look at those guys now who stayed there, even the self-employed guys got helped out by the bank throughout the whole of COVID. And unfortunately, because of the way they paid us in the bank, I'd only transitioned across to self-employed PT in the latter stages of that, which meant that then that kind of mucked me up for like any loans, any grants, anything like that.
Yeah.
So it was a bit shit, to be honest. And then because I didn't have that big base of clients at Fieldworks either, I couldn't really transition much across onto online. And just kind of with how and with the type of clients I was seeing, like some of them were quite motivated people, so didn't necessarily need the help quite as much, or needed some programming but didn't necessarily need weekly check-ins and things like that. So
but everything has recently, after we've been talking, has taken a turn for the better, isn't it, with you? Like, you're on a new little adventure now.
Yeah, so I guess the turning point for that, you know, my long-term aim was to move back into London, into, you know, Hackney, near Fieldworks. But obviously pandemic happened, and then I was like, you know, living in the kind of countryside and had access to green space and had access to run and had access to all the, you know, to peace and quiet. And I saw how much the people in London suffered. And I was like, oh, actually, you know, what is most important to me? Is it the kind of London lifestyle, or is it, you know, these things here? And am I guess I was thinking, you know, if my long-term ambition would be to move out into more countryside, what's the point of me going back into London to then just do that anyway? Why don't I just go like there? So I kind of, decided that. And then when restrictions lifted on that in the summer in 2020, a friend of mine bought a flat in Tunbridge. and was just like, look, do you, there's a spare room if you want to just, you know, take it. So it was one of my best mates from uni. So I was like, yeah, I'll move there. And then it just so happened that her brother trained at a local gym.
Yeah.
And I went along with him for a couple of sessions. And then he was like, oh, they're actually looking for someone. I can introduce you to the manager if you want.
Boom.
Had a conversation with him and he was just like, yeah, if you want to apply for the position, then put your CV in. Put my CV in. Got accepted. Started mid-October. Did 2 weeks. Month of lockdown.
God.
Did 2 weeks. Had like 4 months of lockdown. And it was just like, yeah. So like the first 6 months of me being employed there, I think I was actually in the gym for a month.
Mm. Wow. Were you self-employed there or?
So I did out some hours for them.
Yeah. Okay.
Cause I was kind of like balancing doing some hours for them and getting a regular income alongside still working in field works.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So you're flipping. Yeah. Going between the two.
Yeah. And I'm now in the position where I'm leaving Fieldworks.
Okay.
To concentrate locally.
How long does it take you to get from where you are now to Fieldworks then?
Takes about an hour to an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah. So it's just saying,
depending on the day and the traffic. Yeah. If I drive, it's about an hour and 10. If I get a train, then cycle, it's like, hour, but about the same. If everything links up exactly on time, which never does.
Yeah.
So it's more like an hour and 20 to an hour and a half. I think just recently, it's just been, you know, just that extra thing to think about and the extra time you're taking away from other things that has
So, and an interesting point that we were talking about before obviously we came on was your fat loss journey. I'd like you to cover that because that has been like a very slow, long-term thing going on with yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not actually something that I talk about a huge amount, and it's quite funny now because I don't even think most of the people I come into contact with day to day in Tunbridge Wells like even know about that backstory.
Yeah.
Basically, like when I was kind of when I went to Loughborough, I began getting more involved in like strength training. I've always enjoyed lifting heavy shit. So I got a coach and began training towards doing some powerlifting just to get stronger. That then transitioned into doing some strongman stuff as well. And then, you know, trying to train for a powerlifting meet, which I never actually ended up doing. Mm. But I think I got suckered into the mentality of bigger is always better.
Yeah.
And I like food and I like drinking a lot. So it just was like an excuse to basically be a big pudding. So I did that. And then, so at my peak, I was 109 kilos, which is 17 and a half stone.
So what are you now?
I'm sitting about 85.
Yeah, bloody hell.
Because I met recently.
Because when I first met you, you said you was actually bigger than that, weren't you?
Yeah. So I was probably between 93 and 95 when you met me.
Mm-hmm. And was you actively trying to lose body fat then?
When I met you?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so I got kind of pulled into that mindset. Mm. And then I kind of dabbled at, I tried to lose a little bit of weight here and there. But essentially, I was kind of, a lot of the information I was given was, you want to stay bigger to be stronger. So, yeah. And I wanted to be strong. So it also kind of helped, like, I was working as a bouncer at the time.
Yeah.
So just having the extra weight and, I don't know, like, there's just a weird mentality of trying to be as big and as intimidating as possible.
Yeah, just to stop fights, I suppose, isn't it? Because that's the life, that's the thing you don't want actually to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, you just kind of avoid that at all costs, so.
Yeah. And what, because obviously now you're, like, a lot lighter. Talk to me about how, sort of, because obviously this, again, I sort of seen you go from this process of not doing it. Obviously, you've taken up running to quite a big degree, haven't you now? Like, I would say that's your first priority when it comes to, correct me if I'm wrong, when it comes to training now, isn't it? That's like your first thing, whereas most people have it as a supplement. I definitely do. But talk to me through that then.
So when I broke up with my girlfriend, I obviously went to this new job and I was kind of in a bit, I was kind of like, oh, I need to shift some weight anyway. And I didn't really want to do this, the strength stuff as much anymore. Didn't really want to. And it kind of, the first gym I went into, you know, when I came back down, I guess it was a bit of a wake up call because you kind of pitch yourself as the strong person. And then I was there and there were lads 20, 30 kilos lighter than me, lifting more than me. And I was like, oh, well, that's that out the window. Looks like I'm just a fat PT, doesn't it? Like, I just began like trying to lose weight, and a lot of it, like I'd say from 103 kilos down to about 93 to 95 was quite easy because it was just like cleaning up the shit habits that I had.
Yeah.
I was walking 12,000-15,000 steps a day just through tube changes, you know, train, being on my feet all day. I was training regularly, like 4 to 5 times a week. So that was fit, and just basically being aware of what I was eating. I think I was eating like, you know, 3,300 to 3,500 calories a day and losing weight, which was pretty,
which is a lot of food, isn't it, if you're getting volume? Yeah, it is a lot.
Yeah, so that was fairly comfortable to do that. And then I think from there, I then just had to begin looking at it in a little bit more depth and just trialing different things.
One thing I suppose I want to know as well. So when you started doing the running, did that urge you to lose more fat? Because it does help, doesn't it, when you run?
Yeah,
like you can actually feel it. Even when you lose a couple of kilos, you can feel like, oh, God, I just run better. You're more efficient, essentially, aren't you? Did that encourage you? Right, I even need to take it that still a little bit, get a little bit lighter.
I think because when I began doing the running stuff, I think like I still benefited from doing so much sport when I was younger, and I've always had a pretty good base.
General like fitness.
I can generally just keep going, even if it's just like crawling along. And even, you know, with having done more stuff with combined strength, having been kind of been through some of Andy's workouts where you know, some of the longer stuff is almost like muscular endurance training, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't unfit when I began running. I hadn't really run much, but I wasn't unfit. Yeah.
You could go out and run a 5K. It's not going to be fast, but you could actually just crack that distance, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I found when I began actually running was that, oh, actually, I can do this. And when I was younger, I enjoyed running. I would go out and do a bit of running. I wouldn't say I would necessarily was, I focused on trying to lose weight to help the running until later on down the line. It was more when I began training for my first marathon, that I was like, oh, actually losing a bit of timber is going to help. even then, I think I did that at 93 kilos. So
yeah,
it's still not light in the grand scheme of things.
Is that the first proper running event you did?
So the thing that got me into running, because this is what we were talking about earlier, is the fan dance. I basically had a friend who was kind of got a bit obsessed, not obsessed, but he'd watched SAS Who Dares Wins. And he was like, and they must have done the fan dance on this. And he was like, well, I want to do it. So well, I'm going to
Brecon next weekend, actually.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to crack it out?
Yeah, I think so.
Nice.
Hopefully, if the girlfriend can, yeah.
Yeah. It's so he wanted to do this and I was like, oh fuck it, I'm just gonna do it too. So I began actually doing some running. And this was the version without any weight as well. And I think as well, like I kind of built it up as this big thing. Yeah. It's like an SAS run and stuff like that. But I just kind of like I kind of had this moment on top of Brecon as you're going down Jacob's Ladder. And I was just like, this is unreal. Like, lovely. This is amazing. Yeah. And even like the process of doing the training and stuff like that, I'd really enjoyed it. I'd enjoyed going out and running. Like, I find it very difficult to run on a treadmill.
Yeah.
So actually going outside and running, I got a lot out of. So... And I didn't find it easy, but I think I was surprised at how manageable it was. And in my training, I'd run, I think, 32K in boots. And was like, you know, because before I went and did it, I was like, right, I'm going to do something harder than the event so that when I get to the event, you know, I'm going to try and run longer because I think this event's going to be horrific. And actually, once I did the event, I was like, oh, that wasn't as hard as that awful run I did a few weeks ago. So I was like, wonder what else I can do. and then it was just so happened that around, I think it was, no, it wasn't even marathon time, but I think I just saw this advert for Campaign Against Living Miserably, which is like a male suicide prevention charity. And I was reading some statistics. I was like, oh shit, that's actually, I think the statistic that stands out is that I think I was 25, 26 at the time, as a 26-year-old bloke, the most, the thing that's most likely to kill me is myself. So I was like, oh, I'm going to see about how I can get involved and raise some money for this charity. And then entered Brighton Marathon and then heard back a few months later and I was like, oh, you've got a place. I was like, oh shit.
Better start.
You're gonna have to do this now, yeah. And then I did that marathon. And then while I was training for that marathon, a couple of the girls that I knew from the gym who I worked with were like, oh, let's do this ultra marathon. So I signed up to that.
What's the distance of an ultra?
So it's Race to the Stones, which you can either complete as 100K straight, but we did 50K Saturday, 50K Sunday.
Okay.
And I was kind of like, oh, I hope I enjoy this marathon because I've got two back-to-back in like 2 months after that. And yeah, so I just entered that and then again, did that, really enjoyed it. And then I think... because I was at Fieldworks, Stu and one of the lads I was training and a couple of the other lads that I knew were like, oh, we're going to enter this ultra marathon down in Dorset in December. And I was like, oh, I'll do that. And just entered that.
And that's it. And do you feel like has that started something of the way that you like coaching? So basically Ollie now, not every client, but he's been one of those fortunate people in the industry that has sort of worked and found a niche now, haven't you, of working with a certain clientele, which is actually quite hard to do because we serve so many different kinds of people. And what made you want to work with people? Because I know you're coming from an experience background. I've done the hard stuff, so I can help you and I understand where you are. Let's say, what made you start wanting to think about working with those kinds of people?
Obviously, there was kind of just trying and testing a lot of stuff for myself. And then beginning to... it's a tough one, really. I guess I wanted to work with more... I got so much out of running.
Not just getting more, fitter with it. It's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, and the mental benefits, it's the stuff you don't see, right? It's the psychological stuff, the confidence it's allowed me to have in myself, the conversations I've had, the people I've met. I just got so much out of it as a sport, going from a fat lad to like someone who's in better shape now.
More capable, I suppose. Is that how you feel?
Yeah. But it's not the physical side that is why I'm so passionate. It's the mental side. And that's just not really talked about. And I guess it was like, okay, there's this thing I really enjoy doing, and I've got so much out of. I know how much this can help people. And yet there's this conversation around running that just is not being had. And it's kind of like, there's a psychological conversation about it, but there's also like this whole strength stuff. And I still love lifting heavy weights. I still love the feeling of being strong. So I guess it's those kind of two sides of it that was like, oh, well, if no one else is having this conversation, why don't I go and begin having it? And I guess there's just a bit of a gap in the market. Like this gap in the market. People are still, all of their conversations are being had at, like, with this old school mentality of running and runners. When actually you look at it and it's so, there's so many different people who are now accessing it, What do you need? A pair of trainers to begin. We don't even need that if you can just find some grass to run on. So the ability to access this sport and the benefits of this sport are so low, yet we're talking about marathon times and we're talking about the long distance stuff and we're talking about, running more and more and more. It's like, oh, hold on, there's a whole bit here people need to go through to begin with to be able to access this bit if they even want to.
Why don't we
begin talking about this bit?
I think when people view running as in they're either a runner or they're not, and that's their own self-limiting belief, isn't it? And that can come from they've never been good at it. Well, guess what, if you don't ever do anything, you're never going to be good at it. So I always find that interesting, because I imagine when you was doing your powerlifting days, you'd never think in about 5 to 6 years you'd be running as you are now, right? But yeah, there's that definitely that gap of getting newbies into it, because it's sort of, I do feel like running can be not elitist, I don't mean it like that, but I think most general population people view it like that. They're either a runner or they're not. And it's like, no, you've got to try it, and you've got to be a bit persistent with it as well. You are going to get out of breath. Your brain will go into a dark place. Your brain will tell you to stop and just walk, and you have got to try and push through those barriers. Whereas you do get that out of weightlifting, training and stuff like that, but it's never, running's a different kettle of fish when it comes to that sort of the mental side. I feel it's better and harder.
Yeah. And so I guess it's like beginning to reframe someone's perception of running. And I love people saying I hate running, because then I'm like, why? And it's usually because they don't think they're good at it. Past experience, like, how many people had a positive running experience at school, really?
I didn't.
No one. I didn't have any So it's like, okay, my one or my two kind of memories of running are being at school, being shit.
Yeah.
Trying it and failing.
Yeah.
Because we have all these conversations that I had about running, in that you need to complete the distance. You need to be fast. You can't walk.
Mm.
Whereas in reality, like, why is that the case?
Yeah. How's that a starting point for someone that's never done it before?
Yeah. If you can, you know, go out for a 20-minute walk and run for, you know, a 20-second burst here and a 20-second there, then that's positive. Progress. Like, you can build on that. Yeah. It's, is that progress? And again, with us as humans in general, we're so focused on the end result rather than the process of actually building that. We kind of lose sight of actually the progress we are making. So, and running is like the ultimate example of that. It doesn't help with all the kind of conversations around running is typically that, right, metrics of success are how quick you are, how far you run, and whether you stop or not. That's an old school mentality, and that is kind of that elitist thing. And the problem is, most of the running brands, most of the running clubs you see on Instagram and stuff like that still have those messages. Whereas in the old school, with people who just all they did is run, and they've been running since they were a kid and stuff like that. Yeah, okay, maybe that applied more to them. But the problem is, the running community used to be this big and is now this big because everyone's accessing it. But we're still having this conversation rather than this conversation.
Yeah, that's a good way to phrase it. So if someone listens to this and they're thinking about getting into running, they don't think they're the right, dare I say it, body type or body shape, which is bullshit in itself, when they've never been good at it, what's some simple beginner steps that you would advise someone? So just imagine it's someone that's like a new client, I suppose. What would you say that you need to focus on?
Start small and build. You know, I think having an understanding of where you are currently is always a really good thing to have, because you can't, if you're not walking, if you can't walk for 25 minutes, you probably can't run for it. So even just starting going out and walking more, walk for 25 minutes, then transition, you know, into walking for 4.5 minutes, running for 30 seconds, do that 5 times, then maybe, I don't know, walking for 2 minutes, run for 30 seconds, and do that repeatedly for 25 minutes. And then, you know, either do that for a little bit longer, so do that for 30 minutes over a period of time, or just begin to increase the amount of time you're running. I think doing some strength training can really help. Some mobility work, beginning to get, you know, your joints moving, because the other side of things is that you spend your life sat down, and then you want to go and do this sport, which is standing up. You can't just transition through to that and not expect any repercussions in terms of, you know, soreness, in terms of a little bit of pain probably. So just beginning to do some strength work, maybe a little bit of mobility work, can help that transition be a little bit easier.
Would you say, in the old, you know, you were talking about earlier, the old school chats, would you say that that sort of old school mentality is actually, weights are still bad for your running, which is, we know, not the case. It's usually the application of weights that can be the issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's still something which is, you know, I was on a seminar last night, which is about strength training for endurance athletes. And you've still got this huge divide of people of like, you don't need to weight train, you just need to do the sport. Or you've got this other end of people being like, weight training is the way to help develop the sport. Whereas actually we're a little bit in the middle, and there are kind of like some nuances with how you weight train. that I think people get wrong quite a lot.
Yeah. People, when people presume weight training with running, the person thinks about doing bodybuilding with running when that's not the case, is it? It's just like two full body sessions a week, mate. That's all I'm asking. It's not much.
That's literally it. And it's, you know, again, it's, you know, there's so much in it. It's like slower eccentrics in a, you know, in whatever you're doing, which is going to cause more muscle damage, isn't necessarily a positive thing if you're going out for a long run the next day. Which is like the kind of bodybuilding thing of tissue damage, whereas you're not trying to do that. So there are kind of, like I said, some nuances with how you train a runner, and then about how you fit it in with the rest of their life. And what's a priority.
So key takeaway takeaway points there. It starts small. Would you tell them to track that as well? Because the one thing I do like about running is it's so easy to progress it. Do you know what I mean? You know, like we spoke about, like the minute on, minute off method. Like you can change that, can't you? You can do like 65 seconds on, a minute off, you know, like that. Would you tell people to sort of keep a note of something so that they can see progress week to week, not session to session, should we say, because I don't really like that, but say week to week, because you can lower recovery time, you know, which can, and still keep the same speed, couldn't you? You know, there's so many ways that you can do that, can't you?
I'm not sure I'd necessarily get them to record it the whole time. Maybe what would be better would be to have more of a testing day. Because again, you're going to have good days and you can have bad days. You're going to have days where you feel like you're, you know, Mo Farah, and other days where you feel like you're a slug. So if you're constantly looking at that data, you're going to begin basing your runs on that data rather than how you felt, rather than all the other benefits. You know, oh, I felt like I stand up a little stronger today. You know, I feel like my breathing was a little bit easier. You know, the fact that you got out and did a run after a 12-hour nightmare day is an achievement. What you don't want is then that objective data of like, oh, I ran half a K less, or my splits were, you know, half a minute slower than the one I did last week. Because then you're just feeding back into that whole narrative of speed and distance being the metrics of success.
It's good. It's what I like about the way you're explaining this is actually you're honing in on the other benefits of running, not just the speed and distance and times.
It's kind of like the conversation you were having with Andrew Tracy, right? In that we typically look at the benefits of fitness being like, you look better, you feel better, whereas actually what you're doing is you're investing in your future. And it's the same thing, isn't it? Like, how many of us actually do any form of cardiovascular or aerobic work? Not many, really.
Not many people.
The only other thing I'd add to the bit of a start is just beginning to almost try and run slow to begin. And typically I tend to use or get people to try and work at nasal to limit that.
Does that, so when you think about nasal, talk me through that, is that because they're going to fill out of breath a lot quicker, that usually slows them down nicely, so they can't push too hard, is that why?
Yeah, it's literally like a limiter, right? You know, it's very easy for us to be like, oh, you know, do it at a pace you can have conversation with. But unless you're running with someone, that's actually quite difficult to have a gauge of. You know, run down the road having a chat to yourself. Unless you're going to call someone and run them while, and speak to them while you're
FaceTime
running.
FaceTime like people do.
Whereas if you actually just close your mouth and breathe through your nose, instantly you're like, whoa, I can't run anywhere near as fast.
I quite like the idea of that.
It's just like a very easy, okay, try running at nasal and just whatever pace you can get to and stick at that. And the thing is, you can develop that quite fast you know, once you begin getting used to nasal mechanics, then actually your ability to run quicker in a calmer state as well, because if you get to a point where you're breathing just through your mouth, you tend to be in a more stressed state.
Yeah, it's shorter breaths, isn't it?
Yeah, and the other thing is that it gives people a more positive experience.
Mm.
Because they're not out of breath, because they don't get to that point where they feel like they can't breathe.
That's a good point.
So suddenly you're kind of removing a couple of layers of why people stop.
It's like a positive association, isn't it? Like, instead of it being a shit one where they're out of breath and they're like, fuck me, I'm shit at this.
So it's just sometimes getting people's buy-in can be a little bit difficult because everyone wants to run fast.
Everyone wants to run fast, mate. I remember sometimes when I used to do this a lot. I used to do like a 5K and feel like, and try and do it like when I used to be able to do it like sub 20. And it was just like, I'd be dead trying to get there. And I'd finish and I'd have DOMS in my calves and everything for the next week, just trying to do that running. It's like that. Now I've had that shift of like, what, there's no need to feel like that. I want when I go running, I want it to not impact my week. I want it to be just a nice supplement to training, to everything else. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's definitely, that's the thing. Like if you delve into that and begin trying to race every run, then quite quickly it can become very daunting, can't it? Like when you're like, oh God, I've got to run that faster than last week and that was hell.
Well, we saw people doing this in lockdown, weren't they? Like just smashing their just smashing their 5K times for a few weeks on the bounce, and then it was just like that person was off the radar. Do you know what I mean? Because they'd hit that limit. And then that was it. They're like, oh God, I've hit my limit now. And it's like that fear of failure, and they probably stopped. And it's like, no, dude, like chill out. Because you just got to your maximum straight away.
Yeah, but also it's like, well, what were you actually getting out of that run? Like, was it just for social media and for Strava?
Yeah.
Or were you actually like honing in on the benefits of running?
Right, Ollie, thank you for coming on, dude. If people want to find you, because obviously I know Ollie's putting up good content about running and stuff like that now, where would they find you? Do you offer any sort of running programs? Are you doing online coaching? Talk me through that. So if any listeners want to sort of delve into this, they can come and find you and speak to the man.
Yeah. So, I do some online coaching. Generally has been more marathon based. I'm going to be doing some more in the kind of near future. As well. So yeah, I'm on Instagram at Ollie W McCarthy, and then Facebook, just Ollie McCarthy.
Awesome.
That's where you can find me, mate.
Right, Mac. Right, cheers, bud. For coming on, dude.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Bye.